How's the voice? It's almost back. I love it. This is NBA Australia. How are you going? That's right. It's Friday. TGIF, am I right? Friday. And I'm your host, a recovering James Clements. There you go. Recovering. Feeling all right. And I'm a writer sometimes. A Rolling Stone, Triple J, Junkie, Red Bull Mag. Literally, whoever else wants to pay me that sweet, sweet folding stuff, that walking around money. I'm here in lockdown Larry Armour Studios. Waxed, double vaxed, and ready to climax. That's right, I got a sore left arm. Got my second shot yesterday. Hanging out with this squid down at the showgrounds. Getting the jab. Love that. Anyway, we're here hanging out, giving you the lowdown, all the ins and outs of the NBA off-season, almost a pre-season. And look, if you're here for nerd shit, I'm sorry. We leave all the nerd shit for the nerds. We're here to have a bit of fun and talk NBA. That's what we do on NBA Australia. We might throw in a couple of quick yeah nahs, but today we've got some actual NBA news and guff to get through, and we'll do the first 25. That's right, the first 25 of NBA Australia rank, because fuck all the other ones out there that want to rank stuff. We're going to do the official ranking for NBA Australia of the 75 NBA players I reckon are the best, the ones I want to watch the most. Simple as that. Best part is, after that, we're going to have a big chat with one of my favourite, probably my favourite parliamentarian, because I don't know any other ones, friend of the show, recurring guest, Tim Watts MP. It's great. This is an awesome chat with Tim. We're talking basketball, COVID, politics, kind of a bit of everything. A lot of boomers as well. It's always a great time with Tim. He's a great supporter of Australian hoops. He's a legend. He's a great basketball mind. So you're going to enjoy that. I loved it. Awesome chatting with Tim, as always. And that'll be it. We might check Cooking with Bainesy on the end just to send you into the weekend, right? So why bloody well not? All right, let's get to it. NBA Australia episode 676. Let's go. We're all faking the fence.
This is Matthew Dellavedova, and you're listening to NBA Australia.
Watch out for the Shaq attack.
You better. We better watch out for the nailing somebody in your organization and then getting fired attack if you're Gerson Rosas. That's right, Gerson Rosas, fired by the T-Wolves. All right, let's start today's show the way we start every show here in NBA Australia, though, with the daily whip around. What's more, the weekly whip around. This is a Friday show this week because daycares are closed in Victoria. So I've been full-time looking after this squid, but because today is grand final day, ostensibly, we get a day off here in Victoria for the AFL grand final, old mate is looking after the squid for a bit. So, yeah, we're doing a Friday show. Figured, why the fuck not? It's my show, I'll do what I want. And my throat is also still a bit scratchy and everything. So from the surgery, I've still got a stitch, if you can believe that, in my mouth. It's just, ugh, it's brutal. So, that's pretty annoying. Not annoying! Dante Exum! Officially a Rocket. We talked about this on, last week's show? Probably the show before that. It was in the works. It's now official. That's pretty handy. We actually talked about this a little bit with Tim. I love it, and it's hard not to love it. Like, there's probably not a better landing spot for him because, A, low-pressure environment just to get and stay healthy, and B, it means with John Wall probably going to be held out, there's plenty of opportunity for minutes. And for a team like this, which is pretty young, not really out there to go out there and crush it and win it, he does figure to have sort of a pretty similar role to what he actually had with the Boomers. So come in off the bench if need be, start if that's how they're feeling, but provide a spark, let the chaos engine engage, and off you go. Because, I mean, you just think about it, in terms of guard play there in Houston, there's not a giant amount that they're really banging on behind because they've got a rookie, Jalen Green, who obviously looks the goods. He's the number two draft pick. But beyond that, you've got KPJ, Kevin Porter Jr., and not a bunch else. So it's kind of nice. Like, they've got DJ Augustine, and the Rockets would be smart to be playing Dante over the top of DJ Augustine. You know that. Eric Gordon, the veteran shooter, he'll be shipped out probably at some point. They've got Daniel House Jr., so they've got a couple of shooting wings. But Dante should get a bit of run, and I'm kind of excited and here for it. Especially with Jalen Green early on. I reckon he'll be really, really good. But Dante, just, you know, bit of a steady hand. Off he goes. He's got a very incentive-laden three-year contract with $15 million as well. Basically, that means it's probably 1 year guaranteed with a lot of incentives on top of that, depending on health. So either way, good to see Dante land somewhere that you kind of like. It's a spot where he can come in, play the 1-2 when needed, and that's all he needs, really, an opportunity to get healthy and do what he wants. So excited about this, pretty happy for Dante. Dante Sexton, Kangaroo Kobe, he's back! I love it. JJ Redick retired! Ah, good on him, though. I kind of love it because he's, look, everybody's sort of sitting here and going, JJ Redick, oh, it's just so good, man. He's just kind of quietly been a little bit cooked for the last couple of years. But it doesn't mean that he wasn't amazing for that that time that he was very, very good. I mean, the last couple of years, he just hasn't had that much chance, right? Like between what, the Mavs, the Pelicans, it was a bit of a mess. And the shooting was still a little bit there, but with that hint of a lack of athleticism that he always sort of had, like he was always gritty, you know? He had that gritty FU kind of to him. But he loses just that half step of speed. He comes off screens a little bit slower. The shots get a little bit tougher. And I mean, the dude's 36, so what are you going to do? Kind of love it, though. What a great career. Because I love JJ Redick for the simple fact that there was like pre-Tats JJ and there was post-Tats JJ. And one is much more likable and cooler than pre-Tats. Because I don't know how old you are listening to this right now, but like JJ was one of the single most hated dudes in like America because of his college career. He makes it to the NBA, lands in Orlando. He's already old as shit at that point. Was he like 22 when he debuted? And he made something of himself because he was looking like the sort of prototypical college player who is an absolute super duper star, aka the Jimmy Fredette kind of vibe. Makes the NBA, scuffles around, never finds the right spot or the situation or the role, and sort of flames out and ends up in China. Didn't happen with JJ. He just basically worked his ass off. The shooting, obviously, it came to him. He basically came of age at the exact perfect time as well, right, for his skill set. As threes got more and more appreciated, they're obviously the same value as always, but they got more and more appreciated by teams. It came to him. So all that time in Orlando, then on the Clippers, in Philly, like, it all just sort of worked out really well for him, where he's just sitting there knocking in, what, career 41.5% three-point shooter. I think he topped out at 47.5 one year. That's insane. So, good stuff for JJ. Loved it. And, I mean, he could always sort of pull a LaMarcus Aldridge if needed, right? Just come back out of retirement when someone needs a shooter, and he doesn't have the life-threatening heart situation that LaMarcus does. So, probably an easy decision. Jared Dudley also retired, took up an assistant coaching spot with Jason Kidd there on the Mavs, his old assistant coach in Lakerland. Kind of love it. Jared Dudley, good on him. Strange career. Basically became like one of those elite sort of role players, the Shane Battier types, but just not quite as good. Like, he had a couple of moments there when he was on Phoenix in those weird Steve Nash Amari years. And when they're basically about to make the finals in 2010, it doesn't happen. And he was awesome. Like, he was just sort of that glue guy that just nailed a bunch of threes. We're not going to lean on you too much, but it would just give you a little bit of extra here and there. And it was always really, really fun. I love Jared Dudley. Even going back to like those weird Bobcats days. But Jared Dudley, he's gone, and good on him for hanging around as long as he did. Like, that was awesome. He was an elite role player for a while. Loved it. Did a little bit of everything. Bounced around. And you're probably not going to find a more beloved, more straight-talking kind of dude than Jared Dudley. What else? Ah, Joe Lacob. He's light years ahead of getting fined. That's right. The Warriors owner who's out there going, oh, bro, we're light years ahead of everyone. Not light years ahead of getting fined for tampering, which I think is fucking hilarious because Joe Lacob got fined for tampering by saying, nah, we wouldn't want Ben Simmons. What's he tampering with? Joel Embiid? Like, what is happening? Nah, it's like me saying, my wife going, Yeah, Jimmy, you know when you said you'd be like pretty, nah, you don't want to bang Megan Fox? Yeah, we're done. I'm like, what? Hang on. That doesn't make any sense. Ah, Joe Lacob, light years ahead. Obviously, you can't talk about other teams' players, but this is fucking hilarious. Like, surely context has to fall into this somewhere. Andrew Wiggins, turns out he's anti-vax, staying on the Warriors. What a fucking moron. And same with Kyrie. Again, you don't need any more fucking, basically, any more proof that Kyrie's a dipshit, but here we are. And the last bit of news, we've got two. We've got Ben Simmons, we've got Gerson Rosas. So, the presidente of basketball ops for the Timberwolves, Gerson Rosas, been in the job a couple of years. It felt like a really good hire at the time. Turns out, man, maybe not so much. Because they've been a bit of a shit show. None of his draft picks have really worked out, apart from maybe Jaden McDaniels. But he was fired by Glenn Taylor, the owner there. You've obviously got new owners coming into the Timberwolves in A-Rod and Mark Laurie. Turns out the Wolves are going to call this performance-related. Basically, it seems like he fostered a bit of an interestingly shithouse environment in which to work, where from all the reporting, people are saying that it was like basically folks putting in a shit ton of work and then Rosas basically either not really consulting them over any of it or actually wanting out of it, any of it, basically, or anyone who put in all that work to get much of the credit besides him, and had a consensual relationship with another member of the organization, which isn't fireable, but it does seem like the timing basically pushed Glenn Taylor over the top to go, nah, he's fucked, off he goes. Because there was also a moment where he stopped Sachin Gupta, the VP of basketball ops, from going to get another job, basically the same job, but for more money at Houston. This seems weird because it's like people are seeing this as like the firing guns. Oh, that's a bit of a shit move. It's like, yeah, I'm not sure that you'd let someone in the pre-draft, pre-free agency process who has all of your organizational knowledge about what you're planning to do go to a fucking rival at the exact same time. It does seem like Rosas could have handled that a little bit better because he then banished him from the front office for a month a bit later. Ownership had to step in and fix that. And now Gupta is actually the acting president of basketball ops after this firing. So it's a pretty interesting sort of tenure there in Minnesota because it does feel like Rosas was one of the sort of shining up-and-coming stars. And then this happens. There's also the weird moments where he takes Jarrett Culver's six. That never worked out. Saric has traded off with him as well. He fires Ryan Saunders, hires Chris Finch after no search from a different team, which was always a bit weird. Essentially, it does feel like the Timberwolves let Rosas do what he wanted and then decided at the end, we don't like the way he did it. And it's a good excuse because you've got new owners coming in. And you may as well sort of clear that house now if need be as the new owners are coming in and sort of like taking their baby steps to majority ownership in a couple of years. It's just strange. It's just strange. That's all I'm going to say. And then, you know, basically, so what a weird week, right? Andrew Wiggins, anti-vax, Timberwolves, like executives are smashing each other on company time and getting paid for it. And now Ben Simmons, we just keep getting the same report time and time again of how he never wants to play for the Sixers again. And everyone's like, yeah, no shit. So Doc Rivers came out this week, was like, oh, no, man, we love that Ben. And everyone's like, sure, Doc, sure. Why don't you throw him under the bus one more time? Go on, just do it for old time's sake. But Ben Simmons has basically said he's not going to report to training camp. It's going to be fascinating because that's the reason I basically was also happy to push this show till Friday just in case something happened. And no doubt by the time this is up, hopefully he hasn't been traded, which would be hilarious. But it's still all up in the air. And I kind of want Philly just to eyeball it and just go, nah, you can, we've got you contracted for 4 years. Sure, Joel Embiid, JoJo, and Doc Rivers threw you under the bus after that shit show of performance in the playoffs. Not very cool. Not very cool, sure. But also, we've got you contracted for 4 years. Are you going to live up to the terms of that contract? Cool. Nah. We'll keep finding you. It'd be fascinating to see what happens. But at the same time, I just want Simmons to get traded and we can all move on. But either way, with that in mind, I'm going to take a very quick break. And then we'll do the first 25 players in the NBA Australia rank, and then we'll get to Tim Watts right after this one.
This is Nick Kay, and you're listening to NBA Australia.
All right. Let's talk some NBA Australia rank, shall we? And this is going to be brought to you by DraftKings Australia. That's right. DraftKings Australia. NFL is happening right now. So go get around NFL on DraftKings Australia. All you got to do is go to dkng.com or .co rather / Australia. Join up, get around some daily NFL fantasy, and you can win lots and lots and lots and lots. Basically, millions in prizes are up for grabs. So go get around it. DraftKings Australia is really awesome. And look, if you listen to NFL Australia, you know that we do a big fantasy segment each week. And daily fantasy is great for NFL because if you're in a season-long comp and say you had Christian McCaffrey who just went down, daily fantasy, you get to redraft your team each week. It's the best. So go to dkng.co/Australia or just click on the links on our socials or on the website, nbaaustralia.com. And off you go. Play some NFL daily fantasy. It's the best. Right. NBA Australia rank. So ESPN always do their dumb rankings. Oh, these players are better than those players. Now, if you listen to me on this here program, you know I've got favorite players. You know I like sifting through the bullshit and telling you how it is. And I'll tell you right now, I think it's fucking dumb to go, oh, there's exactly 73 players better than this guy. You know, like, that's just fucking stupid. Like, who's going to win in a game of one-on-one between Joel Embiid and the Zinger? Probably Embiid. But at the same time, who's going to win a game of one-on-one between Embiid and Patty Mills? Fuck, probably Patty. Matisse Thybulle versus MPJ? You don't know, right? So this is kind of fun. I've just had basically, I've always got a running list, though, of my ranks and, like, positional ranks and team ranks and all that sort of shit. Because as I decry nerd shit, this is just my little nerd shit, you know? I like having it all laid out so I can remember stuff because I suck at remembering shit, which is obviously great for a journalist, but here we are. So, the top 50 I'll go into a little bit more in detail. I'm just going to fly through the first 25 just to sort of set the scene. And you can compare and contrast the ESPN ones, which I just fucking hate because they suck. Their ranks are always like these weird, shitty kind of like coagulation of just bad vibes. I'm also not going to have any of the rookies because none of us have seen them play in the NBA yet, so I don't know how we rank them against actual NBA players. I'm going to mention this as well, Kawhi and Jam and Jamal Murray. Considering they're going to be mostly out for a lot of this year, I've sort of got them in provisional spots, but they're going to be replaced, so they're not in the official 75. So without further ado, Andrew Wiggins. Number 75. Because I feel like, so 75, the reason it's 75 is because it's the 75th anniversary of the NBA. And I feel like Andrew Wiggins is the exact middle. I know that there's like 400 NBA players, but we go in terms of like actually good ones. Like, he's a good line of demarcation. Like, if you're worse than Andrew Wiggins, that's not good. If you're better than Andrew Wiggins, then that's probably putting your team on a path to success, you know? So that's why I love having him at 75. I'm here for it. I mean, if he was any better, Ben Simmons would probably be on the Warriors already, but he's not. So here we are. Number 74, I've got the OG Anunoby, because you look at someone like Andrew Wiggins and you go, if you could put OG Anunoby's fucking drive, heart, and grit into Andrew Wiggins' like physical fucking like gifts and talents, you'd basically have like the second coming of Paul George. I love OG. I love what he does for the Raps. He's awesome. Good stuff. At 70, what's that? 73. There goes my, I can't do it. My throat's fucked. Go and get throat surgery, Jimmy. There goes my Tyler Hero. Big off year for last year for Tyler Hero. He was shit. Miami, look, I feel like with Goran gone, with Kyle Murray. Kyle Lowry. Jeez, I'm in NFL stray of mode. Tyler Hero basically copping passes, not from Goran the Flog Dragic, but from Kyle Lowry. Boog boog Kyle Lowry. That's going to be way better for Tyler Hero. I expect him to shoot up the ranks this year, but at the moment he's at 73. 72, I've got Darius Rucker, Judy Garland over there on the Cavs. I think they're going to see a big, big, big... Look, Garland was really good last year, just on the down low, especially in the second half of the year. He and the Sex Man forming Sex Land there in Cleveland. Darius, Judy Garland, I reckon there's a little bit of something going on. I love him. Matisse Thybulle comes at 71. Watch him give the Defensive Player of the Year a shake this year as well. Hopefully, Doctors plays in more minutes, and hopefully, Tease's offensive game jumps in leaps and bounds for the Sixers, as it did for the Boomers in the Olympics. Speaking of Boomers, Patty Thrills, Patty Mills. Find me 69 better players than Patty Thrills, Patty Mills. You won't probably find him in the ESPN rank because they're anti-Australian dipshits, and here we are. Patty Mills, I've got him at 70. I've said it before, I'll say it again. This year is going to be fascinating because we might find out that the only player who could stop Patty Mills in the NBA being FIBA Patty was Greg Popovich. Now we might just see Patty Thrills coming off the bench and absolutely fucking crush it for the Nets, and I could not be more excited. At 69, I've got El Presidente Malcolm Brogdon. Just a very, 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 very solid, sneakily underrated point guard for Indy. I love him. Good on him. RJ Barrett. Now this one, look, RJ... ups and downs last year. I think RJ Barrett is going to be fucking unreal this season. You heard it here first. I love him. I think the Knicks, now with a bit of expectations, the typical Knick thing would be to not live up to them. But because RJ Barrett has so much room for improvement and that roster is still so young, you've got Kemba Walker there now. I think RJ is going to be really good. I don't have Kemba in my top 75. I think he's just too hurt too often. That's why I've got RJ up here at 68. 67, Christian Wood. What ScoMo's got for Cole. I'm excited for this. This is going to be a weird season for Houston. We know this. We talk about with Tim, actually, about Ben Simmons being on Houston, which would be amazing. And it'd probably be amazing for Christian Wood. Either way, handy big man. Jared Allen at 66. Similar vibes. He got paid really well. I just don't know like how much of your skill set of being just really big, blocking lots of shot, dunking lots of stuff, being all right in the pick and roll. But defensively, look, I want to see a little bit more. Tyrese Halliburton, really good. He's at 65. Love, love, love Tyrese Halliburton for Sacramento this year. Jingling Joe Ingles, he's at 64. Find someone who looks at you the way I look at Jingling Joe Ingles. He's going to be a big part of this Utah Jazz season. A lot of success is going to hinge on how he stays healthy after a great run with the Boomers. So between Rudy and Donovan, Bojan, Jordan, Jeremy Clarkson, I'll tell you what, I still think one of the most important players on that Jazz team is Jingling Joe Ingles. Even Mike Conley, fuck it. If you got Jingles on a roll, off you go. Gordon Hayward, he's at 63. You saw his importance to that Hornets team last year when he went out. They were just an absolute shit show when he was playing there. He basically won LaMelo the Rookie of the Year. I'll tell you that much. D'Lo, D'Angelo, he's at 62. Jimmy, that's a bit low, man. Nah, look, the next time D'Lo plays some fucking defense, that'll be the first. That's why D'Angelo Russell is at 62. 61, I'm like Michael Bridges. God, I loved him during the playoffs. He should probably be higher, but look, I had to like be a little bit conservative with the 61 rank of Michael Bridges because we only saw it, and it was like for basically, what, two-thirds of the last year where he really turned into that proper 3-and-D dude. And while he gave us a couple of good, amazing highlights in the playoffs, also went missing a lot, especially on the road. Ant-Man, Anthony Edwards is at number 60. I just love him. You know that. You've heard me expand his virtues time and time and time again here on NBA Australia. I love Anthony Edwards. And to be honest, I kind of think the Wolves should be trying their absolute hardest to shop it. D'Lo just for anything. But now that Rosas is gone and the sunk cost vibe of him going, oh, but I traded for D'Lo even though I gave up a fucking lottery pick to Golden State as well as Andrew Wiggins and I'm an idiot. Like, you've got Ant-Man and Cat. You can build a better team that doesn't involve D'Lo around them. But look, their offensive rating when D'Lo, Ant-Man, and Cat were together was off the chain. So Maybe you see how it goes this season. Marcus Smart is at 59. Good on him. Look, does a lot of good things, does a lot of boneheaded things, but overall is a very, very good basketball player, and you'd want him on your team. As long as the threes are dropping. Mike Conley, 58. As long as he stays healthy, he's still very, very handy. Lonzo. Who's better than Lonzo Ball? 56 other NBA players. I didn't know where to put Lonzo because talk about overrated. But he can shoot now, man. Oh, yeah, cool. Every time he shoots, tell me how good do you feel about it? Jeremiah Grant is at 56. Kind of a bit of a do-everything. How many wins does that lead to for Detroit kind of vibe from Jeremiah Grant, who will pretty handily get supplanted by Cade Cunningham, obviously, this year in Detroit. But for now, he's stepped up in a big way with better, more usage last year. And was pretty handy at times. Obviously didn't work out too many wins, but that's that kind of roster. I love that Detroit roster, though. I just don't really love Jeremiah Grant. There's Zinger! Oh, he's back! I love him! Let's go, Extreme Zinger Meal!
Extreme Zinger Meal!
I love the Zinger. I just want him healthy. We talk about this actually with Tim. Luka, there should be no other better fit than like Knicks Porzingis next to Luka. A bloke who can protect the rim a little bit, drop threes when needed, and just generally do a lot of cool shit. Unfortunately, the Zinger has forgotten how to play defense because he can't move his legs anymore. Hopefully, if he comes into this season healthy, he can give us a little bit more and the Mavs will get off to a bit of a flyer and the Zinger will stay healthy, hopefully, fingers crossed, and we get to see him as a supercharged Zinger Burger.
Supercharged Zinger Burger.
Love it. Nurk. I've got him at 54. I kind of love a bit of Nurk. He's just solid. The Bosnian Bear. Hello, Yusuf Nurkic. And look, Portland's success isn't going to stop or hinge on Nurk, but if he is healthy for an entire season, it makes a big difference. Miles Turner at 53. Weird season last year for Miles. Always in trade rumors. The idea of him is better than the actual execution, but you just don't know. If you land somewhere where they kind of believe in him and trust him, maybe he'll give you a little bit of something to build on. And then lastly, the last two, I got 52. John Collins, that's a tall cocktail, which is kind of fun. He gave us a lot in that Atlanta playoff run, and I kind of love him for it. And I don't know, there was just defensively, there were some moments where you're like, yes, that's what I'm here for. I love it. Let's go, John Collins. There was also some other moments where he just would play in a game, you're like, is he out there? But I don't know. That's why he's a 51. He can do everything, but you kind of want him to do a little bit more sometimes. But he is very consistent. He's much more consistent than the likes of like Zinger and Nurk and even Miles Turner, which is why he goes ahead of them. I kind of love it. And then 51, the last one for today's show before we get into the top 50 in the next 2 weeks, Sex Man. Love Colin Sexton. Absolutely love him. He's one of my favorites. He is like, talk about dudes who are like underrated by their own team, by their own fans. Sex Man is, in terms of like, you know, wanting to really rack up assists and be a modern day Steve Nash, he's not it. But the dude can flat out ball. So give me some more Sex Man. And there you go. That's the first 25 of the NBA Strayer rank 75 for 75. And we'll do 50 through 26 next week, and then 25 to 1 the week after. We'll also do all the other season previews in the next few weeks, obviously, because training camp starts next week, which is gnarly. All right, but with all that in mind, hopefully you got a bit of juices flowing for the NBA. Now let's go hang out with Tim Watts right after, let's say, this one.
This is Shane Heal, and you're listening to NBA Strayer.
All right, he is the man that you know best from getting up in front of Parliament and having the balls to stand up for our basketballers when no one else would. I love it. He's the Steve Nash of the Australian Federal Parliament Blacktops. I reckon that sounds about right. He's also a cyber tech guru, I reckon, if you follow him on the old Twitters. He's probably the biggest Dante Exum fan this side of a bloke named Cecil. He is friend of the show, recurring guest, Tim Watts, Federal Member of Parliament. Tim, how's it going?
Great to be with you, mate. I got to bring you around with me everywhere. That is the best pump-up intro I've ever had. Hey, do you do, like, you know, functions in the West?
That's it. You know, I could be I'm your official MC. This checks out. How's it all going? Lockdown. We're in what? So Victoria, we're in Lockie D 6.0. I'm hanging out, chilling, dealing with – this show is actually a late one this week because they've shut down childcares and I've just got, you know, a 2.5-year-old full-time at the moment, which is absolutely bonkers. But how are you dealing with it?
Mate, it's pretty brutal is the reality of it. You know, I've got two primary school age kids, so I've been doing the remote learning with them pretty full on through the whole lockdown. You know, we haven't even had an NBA season to distract us as well. I'm pumped for the preseason to come back to, you know, just to give us a little thing to savor.
Yeah, it was the saving grace there for the from the bubble and then the short turnaround over summer. But I feel like we could have used some of that like over the last like 2 months where we've all just like, you know, Sydney, Melbourne, everybody's been locked down. It's like, come on, man. At least NFL came back. We've got NBA back in a couple of weeks.
And stretch out the Boomers campaign a little bit more in the Olympics, you know.
It really would have been nice to have like a week between the end of the NBA finals and then the Olympics and go have Tokyo go for like about a month rather than only the 2 weeks, because I'll tell you what, I could have done with a little bit more than that. But speaking of sport, your beloved / constituents, the Western Bulldogs, are in the AFL Grand Final this weekend, which is crazy. I mean, did you expect this from this season? Because it feels like I wasn't here for 2016. We were back in the States. But it felt like that was a very, very fairy tale run, whereas this one feels like you're in it for a lot of the season, dropped off at the end, and now you're in the Grand Final, though. How are you feeling?
Yeah, it's been a weird season for Dogs fans, frankly, because Dogs fans are conditioned into, you know, always being the underdogs, and, you know, you're not allowed to express any confidence whatsoever. There's been too much preliminary final pain in the history of this club for anyone to be, you know, too confident about things. But this is a season where, you know, frankly, we're the best team in the comp for the whole season, just class through the midfield, you know, adding Treloar, you know, Dunkley returning. You know, we were the Rolls Royce team this year. So, yeah, I mean, it's been a strange feeling confident through most of the games. But the real key to it and why I'm really pumped for the weekend was Steph Martin. The big man in the middle, he's just the secret sauce that makes this team kick. And when he is on show in the ruck, you know, we are near unstoppable. So he's playing tomorrow night on the weekend. I'm pumped.
I love it. I think we actually ran into... It was Jordan Roughhead who played in the 2016 team, right?
Ruffy.
So
yep.
We ran into him at a Nets game, like I think that following that flag, and he was just hanging out in New York, and I was there with my brother-in-law, and he's like a massive AFL fan, spotted him across the crowd and like ran over like a little fanboy. He's like, Ruffy, and had a big old chat to him and bought him a beer and stuff.
Ruffy is genuinely one of the best blokes you've met. He's part of the coaching staff for the VU Western Spurs, the women's footy team out here. You know, literally running the water for him. Like, he's the loveliest bloke. The fact that he's over watching the NBA after that final doesn't surprise me. But, you know, the title from the best backing up from the 2016 Premiership was Tom Liberatore, who was, you know, spotted in Vietnam playing amateur footy for Macau with the worst haircut you could ever imagine. Like that, I take my hat off. Libo, he is a legend.
I love that. So, but the best part is, like, I love it when cool teams with rabid, historically sort of just battered and beaten kind of fan bases, right? As you said, you make a prelim when you're a Western Bulldogs fan and just expecting the worst almost. But similar things go now for Melbourne as well.
Libo knows well.
Yeah, exactly, right? And so now... You've got Melbourne, similar vibes. They haven't won for a million years. They've made a couple of grand finals, like, and just had their heads kicked in here and there. But the best part about it is you've got fan bases like that. So you've got signs and decals and decorations everywhere. Like, you're involved in this as well. You've got the office decorated. Like, even as passionate,
I want to see what Chris Anstey's got up. Do you know what he's got up? Chris Anstey's got something in the front window.
I assume Chris's house is literally just red, white, and blue right now. Like, there's just, he's painted all of it. I mean, he's tall enough that he can reach the ceiling, like, you know, the top of it anyway. So off he goes. But I love this as well because, like, as passionate as they are, like, Richmond supporters, like, how many of them really actually live in Richmond kind of vibes? Whereas at least Western Bulldogs, like, it does feel very geographically centered in the West, obviously, right? So that makes it a little bit more fun, I think.
No, 100%. We were on our exercise going through the Western Bulldogs Art Trail map that someone set up over here. Just sort of, you know, you can go see the tributes people have put in their front yards for the dogs. And my daughter said, gee, if this game's determined by who's got the most supporters, we're going to win by heaps of that. Well, darling, you know, I think that's just because we're walking around Footscray, but we're passionate about them over here.
I love it. Who's the favourite son of the dogs? Like, does Dougie Hawkins, Ted Whitten, Chris Grant, Libba, Scotty White, like Tommy Elvin when they had him on a Bulldogs card back in 87 instead of a Carlton card, which I always remember. Because, like, I always just, like, because I grew up in the 80s, same as you, Dougie Hawkins always sort of just, you know, reflected Footscray and the Western Bulldogs for me. But then it was always Chris Grant too, and he always came so close and never won it. But, yeah, like, who's your favourite?
Oh, I mean, you've got to go through the eras. I mean, it's hard to go past Mr. Football, Teddy Whitten. It's still the statue out the front. And Dougie Hawkins is obviously a legend. In fact, he was the godfather of a former staff member of mine. My staff are solidly Dogs members, so, you know, we're pretty integrated with the club there. You know, Bob Murphy, obviously, like, you know, achieved sainthood on the dais after the 2016 grand final. You know, it's a little-known story that when Bevo put the coaching medal over Bob Murphy's neck there, you know, Bob said the next day, I can't accept this, Bevo, it's too much, it's too special, I need to give it back to you. And Bevo then donated it to the club as a memorial for that event. And it's a little-known fact, but you can go to the club there now and you can see that medal. It's on display in the club, and if you touch it, it actually cures cancer.
That's awesome. Oh, man.
But look, from my perspective, I love, like, Lin Jong was really special to our family. He did a lot of work with the multicultural community, and my kids are little Eurasian Australians, and I just love seeing someone that looked like them on the footy field wearing a Dog's jersey, so he was really special to us. Shane Biggs, mate, has got the best social media game going. So, yeah, like, the real fans have some deep cut favourites.
I love it. That's great. Well, look, I'm going for the Dogs. It's like, I've got Demons fans mates, but at the same time, they're like some of my least favourite mates. You know what I'm saying? Like, basically, fuck them is where I'm landing.
You're only friends with them for the ski lodge.
Exactly. Like, anybody listening to this show on the reg will realize that Lakers fan Tim is actually a Melbourne fan as well. So anything that Lakers fan Tim stands for, I'm usually going to go against. That's just how we roll, he and I. But so go the Dogs. Serious stuff. I mean, crazy, like, lockdown. Obviously, the grand final's being played in Perth. So the Western Bulldogs are actually playing in the West. I thought that was kind of nice. But in terms of, like, the last 18 months, pandemic, lockdowns here in Victoria, obviously now up in New South Wales as well, it's a hell of a time for everybody. What's it been like being a politician in that time as well? Like, because it feels like politics have just gotten way more intense and way weirder and way wilder. And obviously we've got protests here in Melbourne like this week, which is just fucking insane. What's it actually like being doing the job?
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, as you're saying, the kind of the big, you know, political debate in the media and everything has gone completely troppo. But being a member of parliament through the pandemic, the thing that's really struck me is it's the most meaningful and consequential time that I've been a member of parliament, because, you know, the flood of people coming into your office looking for help has never been, you know, more serious. So it's just enormous economic pain out there. You know, small business owners who've put their heart and soul into businesses that are really, you know, coming up against it. Last year we had the crisis in our aged care centres, and, you know, I had dozens of constituents die in that period. And, you know, talking to their families, the trauma and the fear surrounding that was certainly the most consequential thing that's happened to me as a member of parliament. So it's certainly been the most serious period and most meaningful period at a local community level. And then, yeah, at the national level, I mean, yeah, it's just broken. Like, just people have gone absolutely troppo, and you see the craziest stuff on social media and the crazy conspiracy theories and all of that, and that's all rubbish. But, yeah, as I say, the meaningful stuff happens at the community level.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it becomes like a, it seems like, you know, having lived in the States for so long as well, like, watching it sort of like the weird sort of fringe shit just sort of like make it into the mainstream. You do just,
oh, man. You have to. There's not, nothing's too crazy to say these days.
Exactly. Like people are out there just going, no. Horse dewormer. That'll be a fucking good idea. What are we all doing? I mean, so you're a federal member. Like, do you, you can't envy the positions of state premiers at the moment, can you? Like, pretty much anybody. Just, I mean, so you're, from a federal point of view, just seeing the jobs that they're having to do, like, I mean, how do you look at that? Are you just sitting there going, fuck, jeez, wouldn't want to
be there. I mean, the funny, look, what I'd say about it is, that, as you say, that they have direct responsibility for the health response here. And that's a bloody hard job. You know, like, we haven't faced a pandemic like this in 100 years. The consequences, if they get it wrong, are the biggest you can imagine, the most serious you can imagine. So in that context, where there's not like a tried and true playbook where the consequences if you get it wrong are enormous, like I give them the benefit of the doubt. You know, there's not everything that even the Victorian state governments, the Labor government, I'm a Labor man federally, I don't agree with everything they've done. Of course not, right? But I give them the benefit of the doubt that, you know, they're making the best calls that they can make in the circumstances. So I'm not going spare over it. I'm not there going out attacking them in public over it. You know, I'm representing my constituents. When they raise issues that I think are legitimate issues, I'll raise them privately with the state government. This is as real as it gets. You know, this is the job of governing where the stakes couldn't be higher and there's just not a handbook. So, yeah, it's tough.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, like, because all you see is, I mean, we have such a, you know, how to put it nicely, fucked kind of media environment in Australia where there's a lot, like, you know, I'm obviously being a journalist for so many years. My background's obviously media and communications and stuff like that. And you sort of saw, like, one of the things that we studied was actually media diversity. Like, this is back in the early to mid thousands, and how very small that was in Australia. And then it's only gotten worse, I think, obviously, in the last 15 years. So it's sort of weird to watch the way narratives change from state to state, person to person, politician to politician. And, like, to be honest, for all the shit that politicians get, I don't fucking envy any of them at this point, especially you're going to deal with, you know, blokes like Andrew Bogut just sounding off left, right and centre, which is always fun. But, I mean, in terms of, like, going actually up to Canberra and stuff like that, how have you managed this, like, the sort of back and forth between Victoria and Canberra?
Yeah, it's been unusual. I mean, like, I'm... Before the pandemic, I was one of the luckier members of Parliament. You know, Australia's an enormous place, so going back and forward between Canberra and your home electorate could be really demanding. Like Pat Dodson, he lives in Broome. You know, it takes him the better part of 2 days to get home after sitting, whereas where I am in Footscray, it's, you know, it's 20 minutes drive to the airport. It's 45 minutes on the plane. You know, I can be door-to-door in 2 hours. Pre-pandemic, during the pandemic, you know, most of the sittings last year, I was driving up to Canberra from Melbourne, and then you drive up there and then you'd have to do quarantine. So you spend 2 weeks in a hotel room. Absolutely going mad. Although one of the quarantines I did was during last year's NBA finals. So watching Jimmy Butler go in fuego certainly helped get through that 14 days. But yeah, I mean, it's hard yakka. And, you know, as I was saying earlier, I got two kids and my wife at home in Footscray, and, you know, being away from them for that length of time, it's not easy. As you say, like, you can't complain too much. Like, I'm a volunteer. Like, you know, no one's forcing me to be in politics. Like, I'm in politics because I think I can make a difference and I want to make the country a better place. So I'm not asking for people to feel sorry for me or anything. But, the logistics of it have been a bit of a pain getting there and up there. But, you know, not being there is far worse.
Yeah. I mean, well... Last time you were up in Canberra, did you get to check on Ed Husick's jump shot? I mean, did you get any of the APH blacktop games going, or have they been put on hold for the last 18 months or so?
Yeah, we've been banned from playing, unfortunately. The COVID restrictions don't let us play. So we've got a really good crew that plays. Well, we aim to play twice a week during sitting weeks, and about a dozen MPs that play regularly. And, you know, that's a really great mob, and it's great for your mental health. And We've had some good hit outs against some good competition. Like, I go to my grave being able to tell my kids that I play basketball against Lauren Jackson, and she absolutely snotted me. that is a It's one of the proudest achievements of my life. Yeah, we haven't been able to play because of the health restrictions. We've got a bit of a fantasy comp up in Canberra as well. We at least get to have the sledging going through there. But the jump shot hasn't got to work out for a long, long time.
I can't remember if I asked, because I know that you've got like Liberal MPs obviously playing against you as well at times. Like how chippy does it get? Are you throwing elbows? Like if Frydenberg gets out there, are you just going for the neck? Like how does it operate?
Yeah, the chippiness isn't so much on partisan lines. It's more like, you get out there with old blokes who just don't control their body real well.
Sure.
There are a couple of people like that that are just like, particularly I can think of a few New South Wales MPs that are, confuse the game with rugby league at some times. It can be pretty rough, and we've had some, busted noses and busted ankles and things like that from, it's more sloppiness rather than chippiness, I'd say though.
I like it. So that's like one of my favorite things that it's weirdly enough, we've talked about sort of the political environment. And I do remember for years and years and years, like you'd be sort of, you're sitting down, you're pounding through like the Saturday Age, the giant thick stack of something in the olden days. And you'd come across one of those stories where it's like, you know what? They're actually mates, like of Liberal and Labor MPs and stuff. And I can imagine the last 18 months has been a little bit of a strain on trying to find those stories. Even like it feels like, even MPs in Victoria or Queensland, New South Wales, whatever, it feels like even along state lines, that makes it a little bit more difficult at the moment. Do you feel like that's changed at all much in the last couple of years?
Yeah, it's an interesting question that, right? Because COVID has sort of stopped most of the non-political engagements that we have. Like being able to play basketball with people, like you do see them as human beings more than as other pollies, right? Like, and for better or for worse, right? Like, I'll just put it out there, Josh Frydenberg is a massive hog. Like, he just doesn't pass the ball. And I'm not even saying that to massively chip him. It's just like, I know guys like that. I've always played with guys like that in every court that I've played in. Like, you get guys like that. And so that's great, like you can get to know people a bit better. And Libs, Greens, Nats, we've got people from all parties. I should say that the Labor contingent is the biggest, but I don't know what you'd read into that. Maybe it's just Husic's magnetic personality, I don't know. I think it does matter those forums to build those relationships. Because when you don't see the other side as human beings, that's when you get the really crazy behaviour and, so we can aspire to something better, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I think everybody sort of, anybody's had to like work from home in the last couple of years as well, if they've changed jobs, I think they've sort of seen this sort of vibe happen as well, or it just gets really fucking hard to like build relationships in new jobs and stuff like that. Let alone
only so much you can do over a Zoom call.
Exactly. Right, let's talk some more hoops though. Let's do some NBA first, and we'll get onto the Boomers. First off, Tim, look, this is going to go up very soon after we chat, so there's probably not a giant chance it gets spoiled, but where's our man Box Hill Benny, a.k.a. Benny the Bricky, a.k.a. Big Simo Ben Simmons? Where does he end up? Like, what's going to happen? How do you feel about superstars demanding trades? But where do you really think he's going to actually play this season?
Yeah, look, I've been thinking about this a lot, right? Because I still ride for Big Simo, and I'll ride for Simo forever. You don't ordinarily love, players demanding a trade, especially when they got 4 years left on their contract. But let's be frank here. I mean, his team threw him under the bus. Like when you got the coach and, JoJo going out there and saying what they did after that last game, well, what do they expect is going to happen? Honestly, I mean, it's unprecedented, and I can totally understand why Ben would be pretty jacked with that. I see JoJo sort of walked it back a little bit since then, a little bit. I haven't really seen much from Doc walking it back. So, yeah, I understand his position entirely, actually. It's not like Ben doesn't know the parts of his game he's got to work on. Christ, I mean, he said as much himself. But I don't think those comments are really in the spirit of constructive criticism. So where does he end up? I don't know. I mean, I want him to have his own team. I want him to be able to run. Want him to be able to, leverage the strengths of his game. Like, strength of his game is finding 3-point shooters. Like, that is what he is best in the league at, running the break, hitting open 3-point shooters. So you'd like to see him on a team, I don't know, like Kings maybe, you know, surrounded with young shooters. I can't really see it happening in Minnesota because the pieces that have to trade across, there's not going to be much left, I think. Same with the, well, maybe with the Spurs, I don't know. I don't know with some of those younger shooters they've got, like the guy they picked up in the draft this year. But, yeah, I just want him somewhere where he can thrive, basically, where he can, you know, leverage his great strengths. I tell you, the number one, here it is, the place that he'd best fit would be Cleveland, right? Because now they've got a stretch center that can play inside, outside. I reckon that's the best combination for him. So here it is. Kevin Love and Garland for Simo. Let's do it.
It's not bad. Yeah, like, I mean, at least Garland gives in another playmaking guard that they desperately sort of need in their backcourt. Kevin Love, I mean, if he's got anything left in the tank, off he goes. I love the idea of just simply going, right, fuck it, let's cut our losses. It's never going to happen, though, because Daryl Morey and Houston hate each other. But let's pair up your mate, Dante Exum, with his childhood BFF down there in Houston. Hook them up together. Off they go. Plenty of shooting there in Houston. Christian Wood's there. You've got still Eric Gordon. Who knows if he's part of that package or anything.
No, Green.
They've got plenty of dudes, and I'm kind of here for it. That's a young team. He can form it around himself. But at the same time, I always sort of fall on the point of, like, if I'm being paid over $30 million a year, I'd probably not just have a giant sook about everything, and I'd probably try to make it work with the guy who's probably going to win MVP this year and a championship-winning coach. Like, that's just me, Tim. That's just me. $35 million.
Look, I hear what you're saying. They tried to trade him last year. They didn't do him right then. And like I say, like, without the comments and with the Philly fans, like, how's he supposed to front up for that first game, knowing that his the teammate beside him and the coach aren't with him, knowing that the fans aren't with him? I mean, God.
Yep. Yeah.
It's gonna be- I don't know. I just think about Simo as a human being. You know, like that's. That's brutal.
Yep. Dante, speaking of which, he's back in Houston. This feels like an absolute win, right, for him, for them. If he gets to stay, if he can stay healthy, they're likely to sit John Wall while they try to either figure out if they're going to trade him or buy him out or whatever. So it means there's minutes, there's opportunity. This is the best landing spot probably for him, right?
Yeah, 100%. It's party on Exum Island. I think this is a good situation. Endorsed by Kevin O'Connor, I saw on the Ringer podcast earlier this week, you know, he's still holding out hope there. I mean, Dante, he has got the physical characteristics. He's got the skill. He's got the speed. He just has never had a clear path without injury. I mean, he is snake bit, you know. Like, so this year, healthy, good situation is going to come on, I think. A lot of young players around him. They're not going to be worrying about winning games. So, yeah, as you say, the minutes option will be there, you know. Let's do it.
I love it. We'll get to the Boomers in a second, but I mean, could not have been happier just to see him every time he hit the floor. What was your reaction? Was it the same as mine, just shitting yourself? Like, oh, what are you? Is he all right? Is he?
Don't get injured.
Kill me.
Look, he had a few nasty throwdowns, and I loved them, but also I'm just sitting there going, mate, you haven't got a contract. Don't go too hard. But look, he impacted the Boomers winning. Like, he was a winning contribution to that team. And, you know, that's the role he could play in the NBA. Like, excellent outside defender, you know, great run on the break. Like, he can contribute.
I loved how the physical nature of his game really sort of shone through in the Olympics, where it was just the sheer athleticism. And, like, I think on the live streams I was calling it cranking up the chaos engine. Because every time he touched the ball, he had zero clue what the fuck was going to happen. And it was awesome, or he turned it over. Like, it was like an either-or proposition, which was really fun.
And then jarring with Luka.
that was the best, right? Talking shit. It didn't look like it was going to go our way early, but, you know, it finally fell. Rock'em, sock'em, block'em, jock'em, Landale. He keeps the Spurs going with their one Aussie out policy, which is pretty fun, which I think has basically gone all the way back to... what, Andrew Gaze back in 99? Gazy.
A great Mamba.
Hammer. And then we go to Patty and Bang. I love it. But Rock'em, Sock'em, Jock'em, Landale, he or Josh Giddey for Rookie of the Year? Can they go co-Rookie of the Year? What do you think? Is this? I'm starting it now. I'm like, before the season even gets cranked up, I'm going co-Rookies of the Year, both Aussies.
I don't want to give any shade to Jock Landale. You know, I loved Melbourne United last year, you know, MVP level finals performance. You know, and you knew watching the Boomers that he wasn't coming back to Melbourne United. You just knew, like, this guy's going to league. So no shade whatsoever against Jock, but, mate, giddy up. That's what I'm here for. He's going to get the burn. He's going to get the burn with OKC. It's going to be a league pass legend team. Poku, SGA, Giddy, like, I'm here for it. You know, and also you got to ride for former constituents, you know, like Yarraville boy made good, Melbourne's West boy made good. You know, his dad's a well-loved community member here. You know, his mum's a former Australian player as well. Love it. Love it.
I'm expecting a Josh Giddey signed jersey on the office wall pretty soon there with you, Tim, right? Surely you've got to make that happen.
Well, I've already ordered my Giddey jerseys on draft night, although we were discussing earlier, it still hasn't arrived in the bloody mail yet. But yeah, I've been taking Giddey for a bit of a run in 2K22 over the last couple of weeks. So, you know, seeing that pick and roll action there going, I think he can make a pretty solid rookie season. He's certainly going to get the opportunities in OKC, that's for sure.
I do love the 2K Josh Giddey representation. I'm not entirely convinced they've ever seen a picture of Josh Giddey in that new 2K because it's not looking great. From what I saw.
Look, I sympathise. I sympathise because I got the long curly hair as well, right? It's difficult to represent in the computer graphics. Like, I don't know how you sort of quite get the bounce that he's got going on there. But, you know, he's there. That's what matters.
But at the same time, like, we had, fellow Bulldogs fan Chris Anstey on the show. It was probably around the start of the AFL finals, actually, because it was one of the pre-tapes while your old mate Jimmy over here went and got his surgery. And Chris was talking about, like, the opportunity that Josh will get and how excited he was for it because, I mean, it's one of those things that draft position is nice and it means, you know, the higher up, more, the more money you're going to be making. But at the same time, it's all about where you land and, like, the actual chances you'll get. And as you said, like, it's going to be a league pass darling sort of team because there's no other real big names on it, but they are going to be weird. They are going to be funky. And it means that he'll get plenty of chances to develop and actually have a crack, which is going to be awesome. Like, it's got me really excited to watch him.
I think that he's going to really surprise him. Yeah, I think that he's going to really surprise him, right? Like, you could see some of the reactions from the Yanks to sort of looking at him at the draft, thinking he doesn't look like, you know, your usual NBA draft pick. Like, what's the go here, right? But, mate, like, I tell you, I watched him playing for the 36ers last year. I would have liked him playing for United, but that's all right. But they're going to fall in love with his game, you know? Like, it's a beautiful game. You know, like finding the open man, you know, creating those scoring opportunities for others. He's got the size that I think he's still going to be able to pass over defenders, even in the NBA. And yeah, like I think like a club like OKC, they're going to really embrace that. I think they're going to get around it. So yeah, I'm pumped. I can't wait. I tell you, it was such a fizzer, the summer league, you know, one great dunk and then the busted ankle. Like, give us something to watch in lockdown, man.
That was brutal. I think I posted, like, I was actually obviously watching it and it's like, oh my God, he's dunked. And then literally, what was it, 4 minutes later, he's out and didn't play again. It was tough. But obviously we've got the new season coming up. You've been grinding 2K. How's it all sitting with you right now? How are the stats?
Look, yeah, I'm still grinding. So the stats aren't there yet. I'd say that I think it's a big advance in gameplay this time around, and I've been playing on the PS5 as well, so it looks pretty schmick. But yeah, in gameplay sense, like, I'm really enjoying it. God, the career modes though, like the marketing and all of this, like first date insurance and all that, it's gotten worse than ever before. It is just unbearable. But gameplay-wise, it's good. I'm loving it.
Nice. All right, well, before the season tips off, before we talk about Boomers, what do you reckon? What has this season lay out? Like, can Giannis back it up? Who's your pick to win the title? Who's your pick for MVP?
Title pick is Patty Mills will lead Brooklyn to the title.
Love it.
I think you just – they looked terrifying in the playoffs last year, and if they were at full strength, that would have been tough. I mean, I know that Giannis made the leap, but, you know, if they didn't have the injury problems they had, that would have been tough. And then adding Patty Mills to that, it's just like the perfect addition to that team, both in what he offers, you know, in scoring off the bench and versatility off the bench, but also just like fundamentally in the leadership. You know, like he is a bloke that he's a winner. So adding that to the mix, I think that's really good. They're going to be hard to beat. MVP, I don't know. I mean, you wouldn't be anyone from Brooklyn, I don't think. Not going to be anyone from Lakers. It's just too much competition there. It's going to be tough for Jokic with Murray out. You know, is this Luka's year? Like, Dallas is sort of there. You know, maybe get help Josh Green, you know, get some burn, get some points. I'll be looking at Luka, I think.
Yeah, it's a good call because I feel like almost all the other contenders for it really do have the at least one other dude on their team that might even take, you know, a little bit of voting away for them. But I don't think anyone's going to mistake the zinger for a bloke who's going to really challenge for the MVP. He's like, in terms of second bananas, Luka's probably got one of the worst. And I love the zinger. Don't get me wrong. I wish the zinger would return to, like, you know, that crazy Knicks form. But I think Luke is probably, you know, the best lone ranger kind of guy out there, and that's going to be a great spot. Maybe LeBron in his last, you know, sort of, he's going to petition for it. He's going to be out there asking everybody to vote for him, and then he's going to have a sook when he doesn't get it. But the Luka one's a good one. And, yeah, I feel like the Brooklyn thing, it's a really good call because they did nearly beat Giannis and the Bucks with, like, one of their three dudes basically playing, a hobbled Harden, no Kyrie. Now you add Patty to Joe Harris and that sort of rotation of veteran bigs that they've now got, LaMarcus Aldridge, Blake Griffin.
Aldridge has come back, yeah.
And obviously Paul Thrillsap. It's just like it's a heady team now. It's veteran. I don't know if they're going to do much, some of those vets, but, I mean, just having those sort of, you know, mature heads around. And obviously Patty sitting there trying to convince Kyrie to come play for Australia is going to be pretty handy too. So I'm here for that.
You know what they need? You know what the Nets need? They need some Nick K, mate.
Oh, Nick K, I was going with bangers. I was just hoping that his neck gets all right and they just need big bangers to come out there, start laying some wood. Nick K, look, we just need to get onto Mike Cannon-Brooks. And
I tell you a story about bangers, mate. Like when the Boomers smashed Team USA at Etihad in Melbourne for the two big games down there, they had some functions, in Melbourne for both the teams that I managed to jag an invite to by, you know, calling in some favours with the state government. And you saw all the American players with, you know, people swarming around them. And at the function, I just nailed bangers in the corner. I was like, I want to talk to you, man. Like, show me how to set one of those bone-crunching screens, man.
Love it.
Like, they look illegal, but they're not. I love it. Nicky was pretty freaked out. He's like, who is this guy?
Why is this guy haranguing me about screens? I love it. So speaking of bangers, we've hit on the Boomers just a little bit there. But, I mean, so you even jumped on a Facey live stream during the Boomers campaign with Christina Keneally and Ed Husic. And none of you guys actually did a shoey. So I'm not entirely convinced that your Facey live stream topped the NBA Australia Facey live streams that we're doing during the games. Because I think behind me we've actually got the green and gold gazy that I think, still bears the whiff of the, what was it? I think it was the Colonial. Look, the Colonial went in there. And
the Colonial.
Then we did the whiskey one even later, so it got a bit hairy on our live stream. But it was good to see you guys actually jump on there and talk about the Boomers.
We would have had, I think we did three or four in the end.
Yeah.
But then I was just too cut about the Opals, frankly, to be able to keep it up. I was just pretty burnt by that. But yeah, we got Josh Burns on as well. He's the member for McNamara, St Kilda, and like I just say, he can legit ball. Like he's a guy that can actually play. He'd be what? 6'3", I'd say, and it has by far the smoothest jumper out in Parliament House. So, yeah, he's a handful, mate, inside, outside, and presence.
Love it. So what was your favourite part of the run, maybe outside of obviously just beating Slovenia in the bronze medal game? Like, I feel like for me, I barely remember much of that. I remember moments of that game. Like, the stress was almost too much for me. I feel like the Argentina game for me was probably the favorite, right? Like, because that was the sweet spot where they ran away with it. And it's like, yes, we're at least going to be in the final four. That was like a relief. Because obviously losing the USA, maybe the first half of the USA game might have been the favorite bit, actually, now that I think about it.
Because, man.
The belief was there.
Man.
It was awesome. But I don't know. What did you feel?
Oh, man. Yeah, I don't want to go back to my group chats during that first half. That's going to burn a little bit too much rereading all of those. I reckon the things that I enjoyed the most in retrospect were the NBL guys contributing when we needed. Like Sobey, like he came up big. You know, you couldn't ask anything more from him. Same with CG as well. Like, you know, like they really contributed. So I really enjoyed that. I mean, the obvious is that you can't go past Paddy Mills in a Boomers jersey. You know, like put Paddy in a Boomers jersey, he is better than Prime Jordan. Like he is unstoppable. Like that man, he transforms. Like I just going wild with that. And, you know, actually my wife was watching some of the games for me. She's never watches basketball or anything. She's like, who's that guy? I mean, he is unbelievable. You're like, yeah, he's the best in the world.
Love it. the Paddy 42 points against Slovenia, like it was just, I don't know if you can really compare it to many other like games. Well, obviously it's like the greatest Boomer moment, and like having chatted to a bunch of former Boomers about it, like they've actually gone, yeah, like nothing tops it because it got us over the hump. It got the medal. He put the team on his back. But obviously everybody else stepped up as well. Like Jingles hitting those threes in the third quarter was massive.
Yeah.
And
Jingles was saving them from when we really needed it.
And obviously for me, Nick Kay either bombing threes or dropping in a fundamentally sound layup was always cause for celebration. Jock Landau stepping up in place of Bangers. I mean, but I think one of the best parts about this was Aussie Matty T, right? Like Matisse just...
Oh, man. Most athletic Australian to ever represent us in the Olympics.
It was amazing. Like,
yeah, maybe my favourite moment of the whole Olympics was pre-Olympics when Ryan Rosillo had a crack at Nick Kay when we beat the Yanks in the warm-up. Like, it's like, who do you think you are? Like, that was probably the most pumped up I've ever been. It's like, you know, how does this lineup beat the Yanks? I was like, yeah, and yet. Like,
you just answered your own question. Yeah, I love that. So, I mean, what did that all mean? Like, watching that Boomers campaign and actually seeing them win the bronze, I mean, what did it mean to you? Like, were you just over the moon? What were you actually doing while it was going on?
So we were at home with lockdowns, obviously. I had multiple group chats going with other parliamentarians, the people that, you know, that are really into it up there, my old basketball teammates from my school teams. I mean, I was thinking back to, you know, like I'm old enough to have watched the 96 campaign, you know, to have watched the Hammer during with Barkley, you know, to have watched all of the coming up short. I mean, oh my God, the last World Cup, watching that in Canberra, I can remember we're at this sports bar that was kind of the only thing that was open at the time and just dying at the end, you know. So it's all of that pain that comes back and seeing, yeah, I mean, God, the pain of us is just the supporters, and then to see, you know, guys like Jingles, and then seeing like people like Nielsen and that who've sort of been on the journey, seeing them kind of appreciated, Gazy in tears on TV the next morning. Oh, it's pretty special, eh? I mean, I know it's a bronze, but man,
rose
special.
Gold. Rose gold is how it goes. So I love that. I mean, the best part about it was, so that one in the bag, the 2023, I think, is the next FIBA. And then we've got Paris 24 basically straight after. So I think one of the best parts, like, you know, about a week or two after was actually sort of thinking about that going, holy shit, like, Paddy, Jingles, Bangers, they did it. Well, you know, Bangers was there. But they actually got Delhi, gets the medal. Love this. But then you do see, like, the idea pops in your head. You're like, well, we've still got Dyson Daniels. We've still got Josh Giddey.
Yeah.
We're going to have a better Greeny. We're going to have a better Matisse. Like, watch out. Like, 2023 Fibers. Watch out, Paris. I love this. We're going for gold. What's happening? I love this. So it got me more excited, I think, about the future than probably any of the other Olympics that I probably had have watched, where it felt like a lot of those were like maybe not culminations, but it did feel like that was almost a be-all and end-all. But with them actually winning, it did feel like, well, holy crap, it becomes a jumping-off point from here, which is crazy to think about.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, like I was listening to, I guess it was the Fran Fraschilla podcast with Gorge, and he's sort of talking about how 2000 was like this kind of end point for the Boomers. You know, like they all were sort of hanging on to get to the Sydney Olympics, and then, you know, we had mass retirements. And that's not the case this time around. You know, like there'll be a few that won't make it around for the next time. But you know, not en masse. And we've just got so much talent waiting in the wings. I'm going to be very interested to see how Dyson Daniels goes in the G League. He certainly looks like he's got all the ingredients. He's quick.
That he is. I love his highlights. He's amazing. But I mean, I'm just excited. Like, you know, just for another, you know, season of NBA Australia. I feel like this is one of the more diverse, weird, strangest, and coolest seasons that I've in 5 years of having the show that we've actually sort of like headed into, right? Like, very different sort of array of players in very differing sort of situations. And I love it. Like, I couldn't be more excited for this season, despite, you know, childcare being shut down still until when it's October 26th. I'm like counting down the days. I've got it marked down on the calendar. And then, you know, fingers crossed though, after we hit that sort of point, we're all okay. I mean, I've got a sore arm right now, actually. I got the second jab yesterday. So I've got my...
Hey, brilliant.
Yeah, so I'm all, you know, bit tender.
They're the real stats.
Exactly. So
stats that matter.
And then we've got the NBL season as well, like hopefully popping off in December. I mean, so hopefully we just have a summer full of basketball here, Tim. How are you feeling about that?
I'm ready for it. I'm ready for it. That's all I can say. As you say, it's like it's a storyline for whatever your taste is. You know, there's Paddy running for another championship. There's Giddy running for Rookie of the Year. You know, there's the whole Simo crisis, whatever you want to call it. there's something for everyone. I love it.
Yeah, it means I'm not running short on storylines this year and not going to be doing too many half-hour shows. But either way, that's awesome. Tim, this has been great. Awesome to have you. Look, basically, I can't wait until halfway through next year when you're up in front of Parliament decry. Well, hopefully you don't have to do it. You don't have to decry the anti-Australian bias this time. You actually just to get to point out that Josh Giddey and Jock Landale, co-Rookie of the Years in the NBA, and how we should be celebrating this. I can't wait for that. So here's hoping that happens next year, right?
Yeah, I'm just hoping I don't have to run a free Simo campaign.
I love it. All right, Tim Watts, it's been awesome. Thanks for coming back on the show. That you're a recurring guest, friend of the show. We're going to have to get you a T-shirt. So I've just sent one to the office. I love it. And but either way, best of luck for the footy. Thanks for coming on NBA Australia.
Anytime, mate. Cheers.
This is Chris Anstey, and you're listening to NBA Australia.
All right, how good was that? What a chat with Tim. What a legend. Tim Watts, thanks heaps for coming on. That was a great chat. Hit a lot of different stuff. And it was, like, really fascinating, like, you know, not much of a political dude here on NBA Australia, but it is one of those moments where you do forget, like, their jobs are pretty fucking crazy and complicated, and in times such as these, it doesn't get any fucking easier. So, I don't know, but either way, great basketball mind as well. Always a pleasure having Tim on the show. Massive thanks go to Tim Watts. Right, other stuff. NFL Australia, we are back going hard. Each week, myself and my man Gaz talking shit about the NFL. Crazy start to this season. It's been really fun. It's been we've changed the format of NFL Australia as well, just to sort of make sure we're covering everything, and it's been really fun. So go check that out. It's got its own feed. Lots of good stuff. We now have new T-shirts and a new store. That's right. You can buy all your NBA Australia gear on our new store. It's awesome. Should have launched today. If it's not, it's not my fault. Deal with it. What else? Go check out World Wrestling Australia. Our man Adam is always on. Look, wrestling at the moment is going through some crazy, crazy shit, which is really fun. So this week, Adam's taking a look at where the Aussies are ranked in this year's PWI 500, which is basically where they rank every wrestler on the planet. He's also got AEW news, NXT 2.0 thoughts, and all the regular segments. Go check out World Wrestling Australia on YouTube. Or just check out FWCIE on Twitter for more info. Always great. Adam crushes it. Really fun. Check us a rating review on your podcast app, however you do that. Go on. Look, I don't ask for too much. Just do that for me, would you? TheDailyLiquor.com. Use the code STRAY, get a free six-pack. Download Knowable from the App Store. Bang in the code STRAY, get 20% off Knowable. Get smarter today. And big thanks always go to From Oslo for the intro and outro song. Check out their new band House Hats. Their album Running Out of Time is out now, and it's the best. Big thanks also go to Joshua De La Reta's Fascinator, Goldmines, Ramshackle Army, Iowa, Sex Should I, Green, and Dozers for the tunes you hear throughout the show. Smash them all on Bandcamp, Triple J on Earth, Facey, Spotify, Apple Music, however you send your tunes. And also last week's guest, Loser. Go check out Loser. That is all the rage. I can't stop listening to it. If you like fucking 90s guitar bands or just like fucking guitars, Loser are the best fucking band going right now. Crunchy, grungy. I fucking love them. Go check that out. NBA Australia supports Australian bands. So should you. All right, we'll close out the week with a throwback cooking with Bainesy because why not? We've got the AFL Grand Final tomorrow. Go the Dogs, I reckon. I think I'm going to, you know, we've got Chris Anstey, Tim Watts. A lot of, you know, Bulldog support on this here program, so why the fuck not? As I said with Tim, when Lakers fan Tim comes on, you know I don't agree with him on much. And he's a Melbourne fan, so fuck him. All right. Have a great weekend, you dickheads. And we'll be back next week with more NBA Australia. Look after yourselves, would you? And look, obviously, as always, if you need someone to reach out to, I'm always here. Later.
Cooking with Bainesy is filmed in front of a live studio audience. And now it's time for Cooking with Bainesy with your host, Aaron Bangers Baines. Yeah. All right, g'day. Look at yourself. Yes, g'day, Cheryl. I always see you down the front. Yeah. All right. Oh, come on, settle down. Thanks very much. Yes, welcome to Cooking with Bainesy. I'm your host, Aaron Bangers Baines. And look, in this here episode, we are going to whip up one of my all-time absolute Aussie favourites. It's going to blow your mind. You can have it whenever. It's an absolute bloody treat. It is the classic party pie. Yeah, that's right. We're going to cook up some party pies for you on this episode of Cooking with Bainesy. Now, I love me some party pies. They're easy as, mate. Definitely helps keep up this physique, you know what I'm saying? I reckon I probably put away about 40 of these buggers per week, eh? Easy. All right, so. All right, you ready? So it's bloody simple, mate. Yes, all you gotta do is go down to your local soupy and just grab a box of party pies of whatever takes your fancy. Because look, now, I like the round ones and you can get a pack of 24 of patties, but I do also like the 4 and 20 party pies which come in those rectangles. They're a bit easier to eat because you can just grab the end and you're not going to burn your tongue. So whatever you prefer, just don't fuck around with the party packs. The sausage rolls are absolutely bloody rubbish. So, now, it's bloody simple. Just preheat your oven to 250 degrees or as hot as you bloody well want. Dump all 24 of your party pies. Don't screw around and only do 12 or half of them or whatever. Put all 24 out there because you're going to eat all of them. Trust me, you're going to eat all of them. When she's all heated up, your oven, put your tray in there. Just, I don't know, look at the back of the package. See that it says 30 minutes. Now, go crack a tin. Sit back. Hang out. Once they're done, grab them out. Load them up with a bit of tomato sauce. And Bob's your bloody uncle. That is awesome, isn't it? Just look at it now. Look. This is very important. Give them a second to cool down. You probably have to only bite like the edge of one of them to open it up just to see how hot it is. Because otherwise, you'll burn your bloody tongue because the insides of these buggers are like bloody molten lava, eh? So, grab yourself another tin. Wait for them to cool down just a little bit so they're not bloody molten lava. Then get your bloody munch on. Oh, there you go. Look at this one. That's an absolute bloody ripper. The best bit is, these are as good as anything for any occasion. You got mates coming around, party pies. Misses with some of her mates, party pies. Kid's birthday, party pies. Getting home shit-faced after a night out on the Terps, party pies. Easy. They're just bloody delicious, mate. All right. Look, I'm just going to munch in this. And I'll probably cook up enough of them for all of you. Look at this. Here we go. Oh, how easy is that? Love it. All right. So get into the party, pies. And that's it for this week. How easy? All right. Tune in next week for a new recipe. And we'll see you then on the next episode of Cooking with Bainesy.